Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Well, hello and welcome to the podcast as we look ahead to round four of the Six Nations. Joining me this week, as ever, is Steve Cording. Hi, Steve.
Morning, Lawrence. How are you doing?
Who is grumpy, miserable, excited?
Well, thankfully, we've had a day's grace because we're actually recording on Tuesday this week and not Monday, because if you'd spoken to me yesterday, then I wouldn't have spoken to you at all after the Manchester derby on Sunday, particularly given that our guest this week is a big Liverpool fan as well. So
he is indeed, without giving anything
and
away.
And he's chuckling now in the background. It makes it even worse.
Our special guest, and only second behind Brian O'Driscoll on the number of people that listen to him when he comes onto our podcast,
true,
is Ben Kay. Benny boy. How are you first? A fallow week for rugby, which is a bit strange, isn't it? So I guess we're watching the Ramble game and, well, Andy Carroll managed to score the winner for Liverpool, didn't he? Stoppage time.
Good knowledge.
He's a better Andy Carroll. He's a better Andy Carroll. Yeah, obviously in Fergie time. So you had it for a number of years, Steve. We'll take that on. But yeah, we'll take everything we can get. No hint of any controversy in the end of the Liverpool game. Let's just move on, not talk about it.
Well, Benny, what were you... I mean, you know, it's a rare weekend for us and like an oasis in the desert where there is no rugby. A lot of our listeners, you know, complaining that maybe the Six Nations should just carry on through, really. No Premiership rugby, no European rugby. What happened in the Ben Kay household then if there's no rugby on? You've got to stay at home.
Well, I didn't, actually. It was bonkers. Yeah, I don't think I've had a complete weekend without any rugby for about 10 years. So the way that the Premiership's gone with less teams, I thought they might have played the Premiership Cup final this weekend. But yeah, it's like you said, an oasis in the desert. And I popped off for a quick couple of days skiing. So fantastic. First weekend off I've had since, totally off since before the World Cup started in August. So.
And did the avalanche warning go up when you arrived on resort? Or are you a very well balanced
about
skier?
About halfway down.
Good man.
About halfway down when I'd done three somersaults, but not deliberately.
What did you do with your downtime then?
Well, you know, looking after my dad at the minute, who is doing okay. And over and above that, you know, we can't even talk football because we only managed to draw against Brentford.
No, well, I was slightly fortunate that my daughter had a party, so it was in Thames Ditton, and I sneaked out of the party and went for a little pint in the pub and took my paper. And I think that's the first time in months that I've actually managed to read what was going on without anything else. But then, do you know what happened? A group of blokes came in and they wanted to watch the F1, and they turned it up loud, and it drowned me out.
Were you at the Angel in Thames Ditton?
No, the Georgian Dragon.
Okay.
Do you know that one?
Gotcha. No, Rob Henderson lives, well, basically in the Angel.
Oh, does he?
It's the only time.
Or maybe I'll stay in the Georgian Dragon then.
Indeed. Well, listen, round four is looming this weekend. Ben, when you were last on the pod, we were previewing the Six Nations at the beginning of the tournament. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of England's performance, looking at what's to come at the weekend in just a minute. But in a nutshell, how do you assess the tournament so far, given that we're three rounds in?
No, I think they do. I sort of said beforehand that I thought France had bounced back and that they were the favourites, and clearly totally wrong. They're a team that are struggling with a World Cup hangover, and the Irish look like they're on a procession to a Grand Slam at the moment. So yeah, a bit disappointing in that regard. You want at least two teams to be really vying for it and playing great rugby. And at the moment, you know, you think that that's the case. Scotland obviously performed fantastically well, good mix of playing well, but also some tenacity and also playing the right style of rugby as they did against England. They let England make all the mistakes and they capitalised on them. So it's not been the greatest Six Nations we've had yet, but there's still a couple of rounds to sort that out and, you know, a couple of potential banana skins still in there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we all pointed to that opening game, didn't we? France against Ireland and thought whoever wins that probably wins the championship. Didn't expect the French to maybe mentally capitulate quite so quickly. Ireland were magnificent, but it's hard to know exactly how well Ireland plays because France were poor. There's something going on in France that doesn't quite ring true. You know, Fabien Galthié's under a bit of pressure. Ibanez, seemingly, you know, the garden was very rosy and now he's been sort of cast aside. Dupont has decided to take absence of leave, justifiably so, winning the sevens in LA over the weekend for the first time. I think it's their first sevens title, the French. But things aren't quite right there. Ireland, on the other hand, are flying. I think we all expected England maybe to move forward a step and maybe take Scotland's place as the third best team in the championship, but they haven't managed to do that just yet. And the rest is kind of played out as we expected. Highlight for me, probably Italy's performance against France and unfortunately didn't get the win. Highlight for you so far, Ben? Not that it's been spectacular.
No, I think I'd agree with you on that. You know, that game, France and Italy, particularly being over in France, I think, you know, we've always thought that Italy against the big teams could run them close at home, but to do it in France, albeit in Lille, that was a step up for them. And you know, a lot of people have been suggesting that Italy should be relegated from the Six Nations, but, you know, finally, we're starting to see a team that consistently putting teams under pressure, not always getting the result. But we've seen them almost beat France at home. We've seen them almost beat Scotland at home and then obviously beat Wales a couple of years ago in Cardiff. So they're a team that are on the cusp of being competitive, albeit not right at the top of the table, but certainly deserving of their place, I think.
What buffoon suggested that Italy should be relegated?
Spare your blushes, Steve.
Moving swiftly on. So anyway, let's look at Twickenham, shall we, this weekend. Ireland heading to Twickenham with a commanding lead at the top of the table. They actually will win the championship with a bonus point win over England, which I guess all the neutrals don't want because we want it to go into the final round. Last time out, England lost to Scotland, fourth consecutive year. So, I mean, heading that weekend, I can't really see any other win other than Ireland. I did read this morning that England's tactics based on Optostats, guys, I know rugby's not played with stats, but they do suggest a lot that the way for England to win is to keep the ball tight and to kick over 1,000 metres in the game, which will probably bore us to tears. But, Lawrence, is that the only way that England can win on Saturday?
Well, Steve Borthwick is definitely very much processed by data in terms of, you know, how he likes to select, how he picks. Listen, it won Leicester the title when he took over in a very precarious position. It turned things around very quickly. It almost got England to a World Cup final, didn't it? You know, he played a particular game against South Africa based on, you know, a bit more on science really than selection necessarily. And England are caught in two stools at the moment. You know, he and the England coaches are trying to move England away from a particular attacking style, which requires probably a lot more time spent on attack. And it's that constant push-pull in any team. You know, there's only a certain number of hours in the day. You've only got players for a certain time. You can't overtrain them. You've got set piece, scrum, line out, restarts. You've got defence. You've got all the other things, but you've also got attack. And how much time do you actually spend on your attacking game? And if you do spend more time than you have previously, then something else has to give. And at the moment, England, you know, it's pretty clear they're not spending enough time on attack, but they want to win games. Had they played how they played in the World Cup, they'd have beaten Scotland last week or 2 weeks ago, I believe, because they wouldn't have spilt and turned the ball over 35 times. Mm. They can beat Ireland, but if they enter into a game like they did against Scotland, they won't only get beaten, they'll be beaten by half time, really. So it is a challenge for Steve. And Ben, you know, you played in many different Leicester sides. What surprised me when Warren Gatland and Sean Edwards came into WAS is how much time they wanted to spend on attack. And look, as it turned out, we lost a lot of scrums, we lost a lot of lineouts, but we had the best attack for about 3 or 4 years.
I was just going to say, before Ben talks about what we did at Leicester, just to explain how that works, because obviously the layman reading over the weekend that some England backs only touched the ball once during a training session doesn't seem like, how on earth can that happen? Surely you just split forwards and backs, the backs go off and do their moves, the forwards do their line-out drills, their scrums, but that's not how it works.
No. Well, listen, it is in moments. Obviously, you have to defend as a team because that's what happens in a game, but set piece is important. forgotten. England scored a try, a George Furbank try, directly from first phase. So you don't need the forwards to practice those moves. The backs can go off and do those. Where the game becomes deconstructed is after two, three phases. So what you have to do is you have to imagine that you're going to win your first phase ball. You're going to see, you know, you're going to get over the gain line, which is might be in the middle of the park. Then you're going to move the ball to one of the touch lines. It's then third phase onwards that you need to practice, because really the art of rugby is about trying to find mismatches, isn't it? And you very rarely find a mismatch after two phases. And where England really struggle, I think personally, is when they get into the 22 or the edge of the 22 and they've got maybe phases 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever it might be. And that's the bit that they need to practice, because that is where you need the forwards interchanging with the backs. We used to have a golden rule that if certain players touch the ball, like a Dan Cole, for instance, if it wasn't either side of the breakdown, then something's gone horribly wrong in your attack, really, because you do not want guys like that slowing down the attacking momentum.
Right.
Equally, ideally, you want to get your wingers or some of your faster players with the ball in hand against people like me and Ben Kay, where, you know, out in the wide open spaces where things are going to be difficult. So, Ben, just on England, you know, we can be quick to criticise, but the coaches are trying to move this game away from, you know, what it was in the World Cup. And I guess when you make the number of mistakes that England did in the Scotland game, it's going to raise a few question marks, isn't it?
Of course it is. England's big problem at the moment is, I think rightfully so, they've looked at changing their defensive style. Obviously, Felix Jones has come in. They're trying to employ same style as South Africa, very similar to Exeter Chiefs' defensive style at the moment. So I think that's why we're seeing a bit of a disconnect between Henry Slade, who's very confident in that defensive style, and then, for example, Elliot Daly, and the couple of times England have been broken, you've seen Slade just go, and it's almost that fraction of a second hesitation from Daly going, what's he doing? Because he's not used to playing in exactly the same style. So we know that it took South Africa a long time to connect all the dots and all be on the same page. And then the way they defend now is the blueprint for a lot of teams, but it takes a while to get to there. You factor in that England are also trying to shift on their attack. They said they'd move to a slightly more entertaining, is not the reason they're doing it, but entertaining style of attack, and not just based on field position and kicking. And yeah, they started that Scotland game. First 10 minutes, I thought, wow, what's this? You know, this is a different side. They were trying to attack from everywhere, but then their confidence got hit. I think probably from that first Duane van der Merwe try where Tui Pilotto broke through the middle, again, with a fault from their defensive system, their new defensive system. And I think that, you know, that just dented their confidence. And as soon as you don't believe in what you're doing, as soon as you're not, it's just not a natural flow, a second nature thing, there's hesitation. And all those errors from England was hesitation, because that doubt had crept into the back of their mind. And it's going to take, I think that's the tough thing for an international side, is how you shift your game on, because you're in the spotlight all the time for your results. You have to get your performances right. You don't have time to have a transition phase. And that's England's problem. They're almost in a transition phase in a number of areas at the moment. But the public, I'm sure the RFU bosses, won't give them that time to move on. And you know, it's very different. When Borthwick took over with Leicester, he moved the defence on and he gradually added things on to it. That took about 18 months. You know, is he going to get 18 months as an England coach to finally get to a place where people can see that it's moving in the right direction?
Do you think that they've tried to do too much too quickly? In the sense that, you know, like you said, at Leicester, it went from one extreme to the other. Then they were a team that were kicking a lot, but they were adding layers onto their attack slowly but surely. What you've just said there, Ben, is absolutely right. They've completely, new coaches, new players, deconstructing and then rebuilding their defensive systems, and also at the same time trying to do exactly the same in attack. And I guess the challenge will be, I mean, I said at the beginning of the championship that success for this team, this group, has to be winning more games than they lose. They won the opening two, albeit unconvincingly, but they still won them. They've lost against Scotland pretty emphatically. In my mind, to look like they've moved on, they have to win one of the next two games. Mm. Now, the challenge is, do you stick with the game plan of new defence, new attack, and play against Ireland and France in exactly the same way? Or do you find, because I think Steve has to win one of these next two games. It really does. Ben, would you agree with that?
Well, I also think that he will play a game plan for the teams that he's playing. And the Scotland attack shift was quite surprising for me, because, you know, in the first couple of games, I didn't think their attack really did look to challenge much. They were sort almost still doing the same stuff from the World Cup. And I think he pinpointed that actually the way to shock Scotland into a victory was to come out with a game plan they weren't expecting. And it started really well. It was only when that confidence got dented. I think he'll go back to not trying to take Ireland on an all-out attack game, because they might score a few tries, but Ireland will probably score more. Yeah. You know, Ireland would back themselves. So I think that the figure point that they'll have worked on over the last couple of weeks for Ireland, purely because of how good the Irish attack is, will be around winning the breakdown battle. When Ireland lose, they tend to lose the number of turnovers in a game.
Yeah.
I know they lose infrequently, but that's been a big factor for them. And it's those big moments in game, the momentum shifting moments in a game, the likes of Itoje coming up with a bigger turnover underhill. But also, if you're targeting that, you're slowing Ireland's breakdown down. And the reason that the success of the Irish, I think, in their attack has been the speed of ball they've been getting from the breakdown. So I think there'll be a massive focus on that. England will probably be happy for Ireland to have the ball more than they will be themselves. But then they need to be destructive in stopping the Irish attack and really frustrating Ireland. Look, it's a tough job, but I think that's their only real chance of winning.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Well, let's take a look at our QBE predictor is saying for this weekend. It's simulated the tournament 10,000 times, producing outcome from 150,000 games, with every match replicated by generating a number of tries, conversions and penalties scored by each team. It's doing quite well so far. We've had 9 games, haven't we? And so far it's picked 7 winners. Obviously didn't predict a draw, which is a pretty hard thing to do between France and Italy. It's actually forecasting an Irish win this weekend, 27-18, which is probably hard to disagree with. We picked you picked your England teams when you came on last time, Ben, for the game against Italy. Looking at it now, is it even possible to pick a starting 15 for this game that England will play? I mean, you look at Ireland, it's pretty much nailed on what their starting 15 will be, but there seems so much uncertainty around so many positions. Or would you stick with the team that went to Scotland and say, go for it again, boys? You've got to prove yourselves to be able to do this.
Look, I'd probably wouldn't shift too far away, because otherwise that looks like a sheer panic. The one thing I would do is, if they're going to play this game around winning turnovers and slowing Ireland down and being really strong, you obviously need people that can compete over the ball at the breakdown. But I would add in some stardust that are going to get you tries out of nothing. And I thought Faye Wabosso, when he came on against Scotland, was absolutely superb. He is raw. He's green. He probably isn't ready for test level in some areas of his game quite yet. But, you know, I think England have suffered in the past from not picking people for what they can't do rather than picking them for what they can do. And he's a guy that huge confidence at the moment. I'd gamble with putting him in straight into the starting team and then letting England try and thrive off that turnover ball. And what England have to do is have that mindset that when they get the turnovers, they're not just going to give it to a forward to crash it up. they're going to play three or four passes away from it, get it into the hands of someone like Feu or Boso, and you stress teams then. If you just turn the ball over and give the opposition time to settle defensively, there's no point in having it. You'll end up kicking it back to them. So when England do play, it needs to be with shock, and they need to get it into the hands of someone that can actually cause some damage. So I'd bring Feu or Boso into the team. I think they've missed a trick in not having Alfie Barbary there. I think he's someone that could really, you know, I've watched him on his debut, I think it was when he scored a hat-trick for Wasps. He's just a player that rises to every challenge that he's given, and is something different to what England have got.
No, agreed. Would you start with George Martin, Lauren?
Yeah, listen, if the style of rugby that you want to play is the right style of rugby, I mean, Ireland haven't become a great side on one performance. You know, if they play 10,000 times, they know exactly how they're trying to play the game.
Mm.
And when they get certain parts of their game right, set piece, breakdown, scrum, defence, all those things, it works, it wins. England, just because they played it in a certain way against Scotland, what the QBE predictor doesn't say is that England are going to make 35 unforced errors. You know, they're not going to turn the ball over. You know, right. Let's just hope that was an aberration, because we've all played in games. Well, I have for Wasps, and I know Ben has for Leicester. We may have even done for England, but maybe not quite that many mistakes. But where suddenly, if every player makes an unforced error, you know, you've got 15 or whatever, maybe a few more off the bench. England only gave away 5-6 penalties against Scotland. It wasn't their discipline that caused them any issues.
Mm.
It was the fact that they made, I think, in total 35 mistakes. If they play like that against Ireland, they will get absolutely torn apart. I don't think they're going to have as much ball as that, because Ireland hold on to the ball for, you know, multi-phase and try and, you know, pull England's defence out of position. You know, they have a very simple, you know, triple-layered way of playing, where they've got a ball carrier who uses footwork. They're not the biggest side, Ireland. Sure, they've got some big runners, but they use footwork, they use agility, they use all the things that you train as a player to beat, you know, a defender and get themselves over the gain line. You know, Gary Ringrose, Henshaw, those guys, they're not massive centres, but by my word, they've got skill. Then they've always got options, either inside, outside, or directly behind. I think England will need to be a lot more physical against Ireland than they have been in any other side, because if you smash them on the gain line, as they did in 2019, both when they played them in the Six Nations and they played them just pre-World Cup in August, you attack their set piece, which I think is the key to unsettling them a bit, and you pile men into the breakdown and make life difficult for them. It's sides that do that against Ireland, they don't always win, but they do come away with a certain amount of success. So are you
bringing size in then? That's the question. I mean, are we going to George Martin?
I think you need to bring some size into the team. But equally, I agree with Ben. You need some stardust. You need some pace in the backs, and you need bulk up front, and we don't have that at the moment. Mm. Alfie Barbary's game's quite simple. When he carries the ball, gets over the gain line, you know. Zach Mercer gets over the gain line, but does it in a slightly different way, with footwork and agility. And
sadly, neither of those are in the squad.
Well, I know, but listen, can we beat Ireland? Yes, we can. If we play 10,000 times at the moment, we'd probably lose more than half of those.
Mm.
But yes, we do need to, I think, up the physicality and unsettle them a bit.
No, I know it's not. Obviously, you guys were both forwards, but I know one debate that's going to run and run all week until we see the team on Thursday is who's going to start at number 10.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, Marcus Smith, how long has he been out for now? Probably been out for a few weeks, isn't he?
Since the start of the tournament,
you know, I don't think it's an easy thing to come straight in to play a game like that. So, you know, personally, I think he's part of the squad, but whether he starts, that would be quite a big gamble for me.
Do you think, Ben?
Well, it probably depends on the game plan that Steve's going to go for, doesn't it? And if he's going to play a slightly tighter game that needs managing by the halfbacks and making the unpopular decisions, then George Ford's your man to make that. You know, I don't think against Ireland he's going to look to play like particularly fast and free.
Is that Steve on the phone now with the team?
Going off?
No.
I hope it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's just telling me to shut up.
George Ford's got a big game in him, because if you look at the senior players, you know, Ben said we were 10-0 up against Scotland.
Hmm.
And if it was me personally, I'd be pointing the finger at the senior players saying, what the hell were you doing, lads? You know, Toji, Jamie George, Danny Kerr, 99 caps, about to win his 100th. George Ford, couple of passes. I mean, he needs a bit. If he starts, he needs a massive game, because if you're going to continue with George Ford, he would be the first one to hold his hand up and say, I wasn't good enough against Scotland and I need to sort myself out and make sure that I lead this team.
Actually, you've probably heard many of Lowell's team talks in the dressing rooms before games, Ben. I mean, we had one last week, which...
It's like the air conditioning unit just droning on, really.
Took me slightly by surprise, yeah. Where he threatened any robbers who were going to come and burgle his house. What's the best one that you've heard from him? Is that what England needs? Because I know that there's different approaches these days. I mean, the Irish talk about the calmness that Andy Farrell brings to a dressing room before a game. But do England need to get themselves wound up for this one before they play?
They're professional rugby players. If they need, you know, a captain or a leader to shout at them, there's something significantly wrong. You know, that I think the balance is that sometimes you need people to do the opposite. And clarity of mind is, you know, trying to keep a check of emotions when you know you're in a hole, you know that the expectation is there and you're not delivering. It's that fine balance. And you know, the good leaders know when people need a bit of a stick to be prodded with and when they need pulling back a little bit and keeping their, you know, the ice in the mind. So
I guess if somebody's screaming and shouting at you as well, it's probably hard to keep a straight face half the time, is it, or not?
No, but depends who it is. The big thing, honestly, Steve, the big thing for me is what Lauren said. It's not about the leaders having to say stuff. It's about leading in action. And the good leaders, and, you know, when England were at their best, you know, the likes of Itoje was putting in performances that were genuinely world-class. And then that drags everyone else up. At the moment, England probably have been looking at some of their younger players that have come in to give those, you know, better performances. And I totally agree with Laura. I would have George Martin in the team there. Just
agreed.
For that physicality that England have been lacking, a bit of fear factor, stand up to the opposition, particularly with Ireland, that'll be very physical. As Lawrence said, Ireland have so many strings to their bow. If you mark them in one area, you know, you start marking that passing game really well, they'll notice that you've not got enough in the mall and they'll drive you over the line. They're a complete side at the moment, and that's why they're number two in the world. If it hadn't been for a World Cup, they'd be well out number one in the world. So the consistency is what's been so impressive for Ireland, of finding a way to get it done. And England need to ruffle some feathers up front, I think. And that's why I said the breakdown. But Lawrence is right. The set piece is a massive factor as well. Try and just get them off their game. Because even if you don't win the ball in a line out, if you put enough pressure on that it goes slightly to the wrong area for a scrum half, he has to take it a fraction of a second to deal with the ball. That then gets transferred across the line. We saw it with England. You know, George Ford throwing a ball at someone's shoulder is probably a result of him not getting exactly the right ball from the guy inside. So it all starts with source, and you know, you have to disrupt Ireland at source, because if you disrupt them later on, it's too late.
So we need predictions from both of you. Just to say, in the last three games, there has been a red card. We're hoping there isn't one, although Jamie Heaslip has said that if Ireland play with 12 or 13 players, England might have a chance. So, but the one thing that of note is that the last time Ireland lost to New Zealand, New Zealand didn't make one single handling error. And I think that's the way that England have got to play on Saturday. But what do you think, Lawrence? Can you see a quick prediction from both of you for who's going to win?
Listen, I think England, of course, have got a chance of winning the game. I don't think they will, though, as much as I want them to. I think the gap is such a big one to bridge. I think it'll be closer than people think, but I think Ireland will win. I do think England's best opportunity of getting the elusive win that they want, the one more that takes them over two, will be away in France, because I think France are there for the taking myself. Even in France, I think England can go to Lyon and win that game. But and they'll be boosted by a significantly better performance against Ireland, but I don't think it'll be quite enough to win.
Ben?
For me, 100%, I feel Ireland are going to win it. I'd love to be proven wrong. Scoreline is so difficult, because England could have their best performance of the tournament, and because of the fluidity and accuracy of Ireland's attack, Ireland could score three tries, you know, more and absolutely thrash England, but it still could be England's best performance of the tournament. Equally, England could play really, really well or not so well, and it could be a tight arm wrestle of a game. So, you know, I think the predictor was probably about right for the gap. I'd like to think that England could get closer. And if they're in it at the end, within 7 points, so let's say 24-18, I think that would be a performance that we're looking for. England have to be in it at the end and not chasing the game at the end as so often has been. And by chasing, I mean chasing to get back to some level of pride. And then if they're within 7 points at the end of the game, let's hope for a miracle from Feu Oboso.
Well, listen, the QBE predictor is also predicting victory for Scotland, 35 points to 14. And they're also a defeat for the other home union team with Wales 16, France 23. With the problems with French rugby that I've highlighted already, they've also lost Jonathan Dante, I think, the centre, following his red card against Italy. Ben, just quickly before we let you go, any chance of an upset down in Cardiff? And do you think that Scotland prediction is about bang on as well?
Look, there's always a chance. You know, what a stadium Cardiff is. There's obviously, you know, discord in Wales about the whole rugby scene, but they will never lose their passion for their national team. And if Wales can give the fans some hope, you know, with the slight, you know, mental fragility from France that we've seen in this tournament, of course they can win. And again, probably what will be key for them is the breakdown. And Tommy Raphael over the ball, you know, has been an absolute tyro, top of the turnover stats this season in the Six Nations. And he's a man that's sort of holding Wales up at the moment, I feel. So they have an opportunity. They're at home, huge crowd, huge passion behind what they want to see. And if they can give them a glimmer of hope, they might just get them over the line.
Well, listen, Ben, as always, it's a great pleasure to have you on the pod. I'll be seeing you at Twickenham because we're both part of ITV's coverage on Saturday. Let's hope you've got something to smile about with Gordon Darcy up in commentary there and Nick Mullins, I'm assuming. But for now, thanks very much for joining us and have a great week and we'll see you Saturday.
Cheers, guys.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who Steve Borthwick names in the team this weekend. We'll all be there at Twickenham to enjoy the atmosphere and hopefully, whatever the result, we'll see a cracking game of rugby. That's all for this week. My thanks, as ever, to Ben Cade, Steve Cordigan and also our hosts, Vox Pod Studios. And most importantly, to you for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy the rugby and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.